This is Canada Reads American Style, featuring two friends who love Canada Reads and Canadian literature. Welcome our host Rebecca from Michigan and Tara from Ontario. Hi everyone, it is Rebecca, and today I am speaking with Heather Stemp, the author of the Ginny Ross series for tweens and teens, but I also highly recommend it for adults. Heather's paternal roots lie in Harbor Grace, Newfoundland. After 30 years as an English teacher, she retired to research her family history, discovering her Aunt Ginny's friendship with Amelia Earhart in the process. As a result, she began writing the Ginny Ross series. Book one is Amelia and Me and was shortlisted for the 2014-2015 Red Cedar Award. Book two is Under Amelia's Wing, was shortlisted for the 2021 Jeffrey Bilson Award for Historical Fiction for Young People and the 22 Red Maple Award. Book three is Beyond Amelia, and it will be released April 16th, 2024. When not writing, Heather loves traveling with her husband, Don, and spending time at the cottage with her grandchildren and granddogs. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I want to thank Jen, my good friend Jen on Instagram, who is, full transparency, Heather's daughter-in-law. But Jen had reached out and asked if I wanted to read the third book in the series that was coming out. And I said, oh, well, gosh, I need to read the first two first. So I did. And I read all three books within 2 weeks and absolutely loved this series. And again, as I had said in the intro, you know, it's for young readers, but if you are an adult, I promise you, you will love this series. Okay, now that's my gushing out of the way for now.
Thank you so much. I appreciate gushing.
Excellent, good, because I'll continue to gush probably through the whole interview. But let me ask the first obvious question, which is, can you tell us how you came to write Amelia and Me?
As you just mentioned, I started with the idea of writing a family history as a, I guess you call it a retirement project. And what I discovered is how little I really knew about my Newfoundland roots. My dad, my Aunt Ginny, my grandparents, and my great-grandparents had all passed away at that point. And that led me to turn to other relatives and family friends in Harbor Grace to fill in the gaps about my family. In one interview, a family friend very casually turned to me and said, did you know your Aunt Ginny met Amelia Earhart when she was here for her solo transatlantic flight?
Wow.
I was stunned, to say the least.
Yeah.
Because I had no idea. No one had ever mentioned that. And I'm not sure why. I can only imagine it was because whenever I was there, we were always talking about family, and I could tell you about where they lived and what they ate and what they sang and that kind of thing. But we never really got into broader topics. Mm-hmm. So I thought, what am I going to do with this? That was when I decided that if I have a family history already that I'm working on, and now Amelia Earhart pops up, maybe I should be treating this as a book because it might be interesting to other people, not my family history specifically, but certainly Amelia Earhart. Would you like me to tell you how they actually met?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Amelia came from the States to St. John, New Brunswick, and she spent the night there. But nobody knew that because she was trying to keep it a secret. There were other female pilots who were planning to fly the Atlantic that summer. And Amelia and her husband, George Putnam, and a few other people who were helping her prepare for the flight, decided if she planned for May, she'd get a jump on anyone else that might be planning a flight later in the summer. So she left St. John, New Brunswick on the morning of May 20th, 1932. And let's say she was about halfway to Newfoundland when the announcement was made that three people were going to be landing that afternoon at the airstrip in Harbor Grace, Newfoundland. Now, Ginny, who by this time was a real Amelia fan, and also the niece of Harry Archibald, who was the airstrip supervisor, knew a lot more than other people, because she knew that when Amelia landed, and it was a proposed landing at around 2 p.m., that Amelia would leave the airstrip and come to Aunt Rose's hotel to have a bite to eat and a rest. She would return to the airport at 7 p.m. to take off. Amelia's name wasn't mentioned. It was Bernd Balchen and Ed Gorski who were listed. And I think she was described as a third person, but the name was never used. But because Ginny was such a fan, she kind of put two and two together, and she confronted Uncle Harry and she said, "Do you think it could be Amelia?" And he agreed with her that it could be possible, just based on what they knew about her.
Yeah.
So at 2 p.m., she landed at the airstrip in Harbor Grace. She was met by my great Uncle Harry and people from the town who kind of last minute heard there was a flight landing. The kids from the local school had been released early so they could see the landing, so they were there. But as I mentioned, unlike any of the others, Ginny had a plan because she had inside information. So as soon as the plane landed, as fast as she could, she ran to the Archibald Hotel, hid in the kitchen with Aunt Rose, and waited until Amelia arrived. Now, Aunt Rose knew Amelia would be followed by people from the airstrip, and she didn't want that because she wanted Ginny to meet Amelia. So when they arrived, Aunt Rose could hear voices in the dining room at the Archibald Hotel, and she went outside and shooed everybody away and brought Amelia into the kitchen. And that's where she met Amelia, and they had a conversation and had some lunch. And then Amelia had to go upstairs to one of the rooms to rest. It was Ginny who woke her in time for her to return to the airstrip at about 7 p.m. And then she took off for her transatlantic flight. So that's how I had exciting possibilities for my family history. I'd been working on it for about 5 years at this point, but with the new information, I decided to investigate how Amelia's history might intersect with my own family history. So after another 5 years, this time researching Amelia Earhart, Amelia and Me was published. And I know you've read the book. So If you think about the pictures in the back of the book, you will see family photographs, but also historical photographs of Amelia when she was in Harbor Grace. Some of those family photographs came from the people I interviewed when I went back to Newfoundland to find out more about my own family. Some came from my great-grandparents and my grandparents, but it was amazing to do the research now because I not only was interested in Amelia, but I had the family link. So it was a pretty exciting process, going through all of this material and then finally being able to use it to finish a book.
Okay, I have a couple follow-up questions. First, I want to ask, were you really, I think as women, we're sort of all fans of Amelia Earhart just in general because of her great, accomplishments. But did you know much about her prior to finding out that your family had a connection to her? Like, did you, when you were researching, did you learn just so much you didn't know?
Absolutely. I knew who Amelia Earhart was. I knew she had disappeared. I knew she was kind of America's sweetheart. She was nicknamed Lady Lindy after Charles Lindbergh. And I knew a few things like that, but I had no idea of the depth of her accomplishments, and certainly not the connections with my own family.
And then the other thing I wanted to ask or even make a comment, which is, you know, it's just so sad that you didn't know that, because you could have asked your Aunt Ginny, like, what was your impression of her? And so I just think, what a great way to remind ourselves that we need to ask our older relatives about the stories in their lives that they never shared that we didn't know about, right? Because you could have had an amazing, you know, interaction with Ginny about her.
Yes. And you're absolutely right. I got that sense when my family were all gone. My paternal side of the family were all gone. Mm-hmm. I'm the eldest of four. And so I knew the family stories as much as anyone did, better than my siblings. And I thought, if I don't write these stories down, they're gone forever. Mm-hmm. And I was constantly reminded about just what you've said. If I'd only known this before Ginny passed away, it would have just made an amazing connection. And she could have added so much more.
Yeah.
Her friends added a lot. And my other family members, Aunt Louise Archibald was great. It was her family albums in which I got a lot of the information about the Rosses. I'm a Ross, and the Rosses and the Archibalds are cousins. So it was good to get the information at all, but it would have been so much better if it could have come directly from Ginny.
Oh yeah, that would have been amazing. So now I did want to ask you too, because there, as I said, there are three books in the series. And I wondered, when you wrote the first book, did you actually plan a trilogy from the beginning, or did it just kind of evolve?
I didn't plan it at all. And with the completion of Amelia and Me, I felt satisfied that I had been able to combine my family story with Amelia's solo transatlantic flight. But the story itself didn't feel finished. Mm-hmm. Because of all the research I did, I knew that in 1935, Amelia became a part-time career counselor for women and an aviation advisor at Purdue University. And this happened because the president at the time, Edward C. Elliott, was interested in getting more women into higher education. Amelia shared his goal, and especially if the women took engineering and also earned a pilot's license, because, of course, she was most interested in getting women into non-traditional roles, but specifically aviation. So it seemed natural for Ginny to follow Amelia's suggestion to apply to Purdue. Mm-hmm. Now, I had kind of unconsciously written an epilogue at the end of Amelia and Me. And in it, I did hint at what Amelia and her husband, George Putnam, were trying to accomplish. And that was to find a university to team with in order to get more women into higher education and specifically aviation. That was true. And I included that because I thought, well, this is an interesting epilogue to the Amelia and Ginny story. But the more I investigated it, the more I saw the possibilities that there was more to the story. So under Amelia's wing, the second book in the series begins in 1936 and includes Ginny's time at Purdue until her graduation in 1940. And in the epilogue, I did include a suggestion from Amelia to Ginny that once Ginny was finished school in Newfoundland, she might consider looking into higher education or getting her pilot's license. So it all kind of seemed to come together at that point. Amelia was also at Purdue at that time, because until she disappeared in 1937, as I mentioned, she had this part-time job. And she disappeared in July 2nd, I guess, 1937. So at that point, she was out of the book. But I continued the second book up to Ginny's graduation. Actually, the same thing happened with the third book, because now it's 1940, and all of Ginny's Purdue friends from mechanical engineering and her roommate, who is not in engineering but finds a way of enlisting with the U.S. Army Air Corps, are all signing up to, they want to get involved in the fight against Hitler. So the Americans are neutral at this point, but that doesn't mean that young people aren't signing up for the military, because let's face it, it's 1940 and Britain's in big trouble because of the Blitz going on. And so there is a feeling that maybe young people could do something if they were in the right place at the right time. So Ginny has a problem that they don't have. She can't do the same thing as they are doing. She can't enlist because the U.S. Army Air Corps only accepts male pilots. So again, it was the combination of the dilemma that Ginny faced at the end of the second book and my own interest in the Second World War that pulled me into the third book.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I just want to say too, in the second book, I loved first of all, I didn't know that Amelia Earhart was connected to Purdue University in Indiana. Like, I just didn't know that. But I loved the time that Ginny was in at the university. I loved that what felt like a very real experience that women, young women would have gone through trying to break into an all-male field, and the misogyny and the everything that she faces with the, you know, with the professors and everything, that whole thing, it was just, you know, yes, halfway through you're missing Amelia, she's out of the story at that point, but just following Ginny's story during university was amazing. And then I, for the third book, and I said this to you earlier, I don't want to say too much about the third book because I want everyone to discover the amazing third story without giving away too much, because it blew my mind. Like, I absolutely loved, well, I loved all three of them, but by the time I got to book three, I was thinking, like, where in the world are we going? And I love what you did with the story. Absolutely amazing.
Thank you so much.
So my next question is, because I understand you started to write your family history, but I wondered, how difficult was it to transition from being an educator to becoming a published author with a trilogy?
Well, the first step wasn't difficult at all, the transition from teaching English to writing the family history. As an English teacher, my spelling and grammar weren't a problem. And I loved looking at old family photos and interviewing people who could share stories with me about Harbor Grace. But when I decided to see if I could combine my family history with Amelia's, I hit a wall. I remember sitting in a study, Carol, at Nipissing University with all of my family photos and historical photos and research notes, a brand new notebook, a handful of automatic pencils, and sitting back in the chair and thinking, so what do I do now? Because I had no idea. From my teaching, I knew about introduction, rising action, climax, falling action. I knew how to analyze and discuss literary fiction, but how to create it was a whole new problem.
Yeah.
I really didn't know where to begin. So I started taking writing courses. I read a young adult fiction. I took more courses. And finally, I found a way into the writing of the book. And but I did find something else about the transition from writing, or pardon me, the transition from teaching to writing, in the sense that I had taught essay writing, and that included graphic organizers to arrange your ideas and information before you start writing. So I was able to use that to initially get ideas down on paper. Mm-hmm. And beginning with Amelia and Me, I tried to build in curriculum connections because I liked an interdisciplinary approach. I team taught with teachers from other subject areas, and we all found the results interesting for us. And we found that the students liked that approach as well. So in all three books, I've taken what we call a STEM approach. Do you know what that is?
Yes. Yeah. That's so fascinating.
And so it was my teaching experience while writing the book that allowed me to pull that in. Now, there is another term. Well, maybe I should mention.
Sure.
That STEM means science, technology, engineering, and math. And the idea is that these individual content areas can be combined out of any of these content areas. So although I'm teaching English, if I look at a novel, I can see connections to math or science and technology, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Then a new word came out, and it is STEAM. So as well as science, technology, engineering, we add the arts to get the A in STEAM, and math. So that made it even easier because now the arts was a more formally recognized part of that interdisciplinary approach. So at first, I really didn't see a connection with what I had done in teaching. But the more I got into the writing of the book, that's when I could start joining the dots, so to speak.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And I will say I learned so much. I really feel that sort of STEM process because I learned so much that I didn't know. And I have to laugh because there were things I was looking up as I was reading the books as well. And I just learned so much because I love to do a deep dive when I'm reading books like this.
Now you know what fish and brews is, that famous
exactly yes
dish.
Yes.
And if you come to Newfoundland, you'll get to enjoy it.
Oh my gosh, you're right, because I did look that up as well. That's so funny. Although you did have a thing in the book that did explain some, you know, things at the back of the book. But I have to laugh because I did look it up as well because I thought, yeah, I did not know what that was at all. Never heard of it. Okay. Now I wanted to ask you this because, and I believe this would be a compliment. I would assume so, but I wanted to ask if anyone has told you that the series reminds them of Anne of Green Gables, because we all love Anne of Green Gables, but I just had that same sort of emotional feeling reading the Ginny Ross series. I just thought it's a strong, plucky female character who has is facing challenges, but it's also the language, and you really evoked the time period. It felt just like I was in the middle of, you know, those years, and it just was fabulous. I loved it.
Well, thank you so much. Well, and as a matter of fact, some people have mentioned that, but interestingly enough, adults, they say it, just as you did, they see the similarities between Ginny and Anne. And it's something I hadn't expected. Because I write middle grade and young adult historical fiction, I was really pleasantly surprised when adults were getting in touch with me, making the comparison, and also telling me how much they enjoyed the book. And interestingly, they bought the book for their children or grandchildren. And maybe the child's birthday wasn't for another week or so. So they read the book before they passed it on.
Yeah.
And that's how they were introduced to the book. And that's why they got in touch with me to tell me that they had enjoyed it. Now, you did do a written review for the book, and I think you mentioned in the review that, how did you put it? This not so young adult really enjoyed the trilogy or something like that.
Yeah. And the reason I want to just kind of keep reiterating this is because I know so many of my adult reading friends love Anne of Green Gables, and I really want them to look into the Ginny Ross series because I believe they will love it as much. And so that's why I say in the intro, I said it's for kind of tweens, teens, but it really, I promise you, adults will love it for the historical fiction, the accuracy of the time period, the sense that it evokes. I mean, just when she's taking the train across Newfoundland to go to New York City, that whole thing, like I said, I felt like I was there. The descriptions of just the architecture and just the time period was so beautiful and so powerfully image evoking, I guess. I don't know how else to kind of keep saying this about how much it resonated with me as a reader, as an adult reader. Right. Mm-hmm. So I just want to keep pushing this idea that I want my adult friends to look at this series because I loved it so much. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Now, my next question, and this might be kind of a complicated answer perhaps, but I wanted to ask you about your research process because, yes, you had your family history, but my gosh, you really had to dig deep to get all of this information about the time period and Amelia and everything. So how in the world did you manage the research process?
Well, I like doing in-person research, visiting museums, archives, and galleries. There I can talk directly to people with the information I'm looking for. When I started my family history, I was thrilled to find photos of my family in the National Archives in Ottawa. That's in Ontario, and the Provincial Archives in St. John's, Newfoundland. But my very favorite way of doing research is in-person interviews. And I was fortunate enough to interview my extended family and Ginny's friends when they were in their 80s and 90s. And that goes back to something you and I talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Grabbing these stories before they disappear. They not only told me about experiencing Amelia's takeoff, some of them were actually teachers in the school at the time, or they were in their late teens, and they could actually remember seeing the takeoff. And they also were able to tell me what it was like growing up in Harbor Grace, Newfoundland at that time. In 1932, Newfoundland was deep into the Depression. And so the details they were able to give me were so valuable. And back to your point about creating worlds that, in my case, are historical, are those details. And you can read and get information, but in my experience, the most colorful details come from people's personal experiences. Mm-hmm. And that's why I really enjoyed the interviews as much as I did. Sadly, they're all gone now. I was interviewing them, probably 15 20 years ago now, and they were in their 80s and 90s at that time.
Yeah.
So I really feel like I caught a window of opportunity before it closed. And I was lucky enough to do the same with the next two books. I was able to interview people who had firsthand experience of what I wanted to describe. And the unexpected benefit from all of that was how keen they were to share their stories, because they wanted people to know what they had experienced. And so I gained new readers through the families of the people that I had interviewed, because in fact, it was their family story as well.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
But, you know, I had a real setback with COVID.
Mm, yeah.
Because that kind of research was impossible. Luckily, I was able to access resource people through someone who became a friend after we had met through our mutual research. His name's Daryl Hillier, and he's the author of North Atlantic Crossroads, the Royal Air Force Ferry Command, 1940 to 1946. So we already knew of each other and had exchanged information when he stepped in and via email brought his resource people from other parts of Newfoundland, Northern Ireland, England, Montreal, and Ottawa. And they formed a kind of team, I guess you'd call them, who shared their own research so that I could complete Beyond Amelia. I don't know what I would have done without Daryl and the people he brought to me, because although everything was shut down for COVID and it was suggested we should do our research virtually, it was difficult because the people weren't even in the buildings. They were trying their best to work from home, but when you actually need information that is perhaps not digitalized, then it was difficult. So these people really, Daryl, and his friends really rescued me so that I could finish the third book, Beyond Amelia.
I love hearing that because, you know, when you especially with historical fiction, you have to have a great team that you're working with to be able to fill in the gaps that you may not know yourself, but that their expertise will just make the book shine, right? So that's, I love that story. That's fabulous. So now my next question, and I am going to put a little qualifier at the beginning because I'm saying without giving away too much about Beyond Amelia, because I think as a reader, it's great to discover, you know, on your own what's going to happen. But are there plans to write a fourth book? You wrote about another amazing real-life woman whose story I didn't know, and I really want to know more about her through Ginny's eyes. And so I am begging you for a fourth book, please. No pressure.
No. Well, the only thing I can say is after having finished Beyond Amelia, through some of the difficulties that I just described, yeah, with COVID and so on and so forth, my plan immediately is to see what I can do to market the series, mm-hmm, and then to think about where I'm going to go with my writing next. But I know exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I think you're referring to Jackie Cochran, right?
Yes, yeah, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Well, she... Once you get some hints about what her goals were in the book, as you say, mm-hmm, but I don't think I'm giving away too much to say she did go on to help organize the Women's Air Force Service pilots, along with other female pilots, in the mid-1940s. And she really is another fascinating female pilot. And it would be so interesting to look more into her history. But at the moment, I'm thinking about something else.
Okay. Well, that was going to be my next question, which is, do you have anything else in the works? So you do have something you're thinking about?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things that have been percolating, and I may take a look at those before I think about what exactly I want to do next. My dad, his name was Billy Ross, was Ginny's younger brother by 4 years. And he was quite a character. He was, quite frankly, he was a brat. And he wasn't particularly nice to his older sister either. But setting that aside, the history in Newfoundland is so varied and so interesting. There is a man named Peter Easton. Do you know that name?
No.
Okay. Peter Easton was a pirate, and his home base was in Harbor Grace, Newfoundland. And as a matter of fact, it was on the location where the Conception Bay Museum is located today. And I, even when I was writing the Ginny series, I was thinking about how interesting it would be to look at that history, but through my father's eyes, because I thought little boys would really be interested in pirates, for example.
I love that idea. And I love that your family history kind of continues in another way, in a different sort of an offshoot in a different way. But I love that. So I will read that one next, if that comes next. And then I will patiently wait for my Jackie Cochran book. Because I'm telling you, when I'm reading historical fiction, if I come across something and I go, you know, what was really fascinating to me was to find out in the third book, okay, I'll just say it, that tampons existed way before I thought they existed. Because I'm not kidding. When it said that in the book, I looked it up. I was like, wait a minute, what? I looked it up and I even told my mom, I said, did you know these things were around like in the 30s? She said, no. So,
you know, Jen, my daughter-in-law, so you're going to get a kick out of this. She is described in the acknowledgments as my therapist, my daughter-in-law, and my best friend, because she was the one who did help me with that research. And she did such a good job. But, you know, it's interesting. The fine line you walk between making the historical fiction as accurate as you can, mm-hmm. while at the same time deciding how much detail to include. And early on, I realized that female pilots had very specific needs, quite different from male pilots. Mm-hmm. And well, that was one of them. And yep. I will just throw another little teaser out there. What did you think of the metal funnel?
You know, that's so fascinating because I think they have things like that more modern day for, I think, women who hike or something. And I thought that how interesting that that was around way beyond, you know, this thing that I had seen fairly recently in the last, say, 10 years or so.
Yeah.
So that was really fascinating. And I think you nailed it when you said there were needs for female pilots that male pilots didn't have to worry about. But it was great to put it into the story because it, again, took it to another level where it was a question that I kind of was wondering about, like, oh, how in the world did they get around this? And you had answered it and historically accurate. So I loved that.
Thank you. It was fun. That research was fun. Although Jen and I sometimes turned to each other and said, are the readers going to think we're obsessed with bodily functions?
No, but that's what I'm saying is I think the natural feeling is you'd kind of wonder. And that's why the fact that it was in there, I thought fit perfectly. So I will assure both of you that you nailed it. That was absolutely the best.
Thank you.
I do want to mention, and I'm kind of throwing this at you and hoping that you remember the dates. I think I have them, but you have something special you'll be doing in July, and I'm going to go as well. I'm going to do a road trip this summer. When I heard about it and you mentioned it and I looked it up and I decided to do a road trip, you have something special coming up in July of this year. Do you want to just mention it?
I definitely would like to mention it.
Yeah.
I am going to be at the Amelia Earhart Festival in Atchison, Kansas, talking a little bit about the series in general, but more specifically about the third book, Beyond Amelia. And they have a brand new hangar there, and they have something that you and I are both going to want to see, and that is an Electra 10E, which was the plane that Amelia was flying when she disappeared. And interestingly enough, that plane was supplied by Purdue University as part of what she was doing in her work with them in the 2 years before she disappeared. So I'm delighted that you're going to be there.
Yes.
And that we're both going to enjoy that Amelia Earhart hangar together. That's great.
Absolutely. And I will be, and as I told you, I will be buying all three books for myself, because I want you to sign them. And I'm also going to buy another set, and I'm going to donate them to a school library, because I really want young people to read these books. But again, I'm just going to keep banging the drum here. I want all my adult friends to check out the series as well. And I'm going to become a broken record about it. That's just how it's going to be. So
excellent.
Heather, my last question, and this is one that my co-host Tara always asks, and I often forget to, but I remembered this time, and that is, are you currently reading anything, and what are you currently reading?
Well, I read young adult fiction, fantasy, historical fiction. So I've just finished a historical fiction called When the Dykes Breached by Martha Atema. And it's about the flood in Holland in 1953. I read the finished book not too long ago and absolutely loved it. I strongly recommend it. Another one on my list of historical, young adult historical fiction is Winter Kill by Marcia Skripik. So I'm looking forward to reading that. I recently finished, and this gets into my adult reading, but as you said, these lines are blurred, aren't they?
Mm-hmm, absolutely,
adult,
yes.
Adult fiction. But I recently read Thomas King's Dreadful Water mystery series. Do you know Thomas King?
I do, and I've heard of that series. I've never read it, though. Yeah.
It's about a Cherokee ex-cop who solves mysteries in the fictional town of Chinook. And I was first introduced to his work in a radio series that he wrote called The Dead Dog Cafe. And both The Dead Dog Cafe and this particular series are satirical and laugh out loud funny. I was reading it in bed, and every now and then I'd burst out laughing, and my husband would just kind of shake his head. but then he read the whole series and thought the same as me, that it was just a great series.
Heather, I just want to say thank you so much, number one, for writing three fabulous books. One of the things I'm sort of famous for among my friends is I'll start a series and never finish it. And the fact that I read all three of your books in 2 weeks, I think speaks really highly from my point of view of how much I love them. But I am so thankful that you wrote three fantastic books. I look forward to whatever you do in the future. Cannot wait to meet you in person in July in Kansas. And just thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Well, first, thank you for inviting me. It's been a real pleasure. And likewise, I look forward to meeting you in Kansas and enjoying everything that we're going to see there.
Great. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on our bookish journey. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing, rating, and reviewing Canada Reads American Style wherever you listen. You can connect with the podcast and Rebecca on Instagram at Canada Reads American Style and with Tara at On a Branch Reads. Until next time, keep reading.